Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear. This is the original Trapping Podcast. This is our 400th episode. That's just of the trapping. Then you throw in another 100 and so from the rants and the Man Strong Podcast, and you throw in all the ones that Tim's done at Meat Trapper. I'm still amazed I can come up with something to talk about. I'll be honest with you, it's kind of, sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes you, the listeners, make it easier because you have questions, you have things you're wondering about, and but 400. That means we've been doing Trapping Radio for 400 weeks. Just boggles my mind. But I want to think a little bit about what happened this morning. Just tell you a little bit about it. It's kind of freaky. It's something I never really thought about before. I've got in fog before on the river trapping, and you muddle your way through it. Sometimes you end up in the opposite direction you thought you were. But I was out catfishing. I was trying out some new. I'm trying to figure out this lake where the catfish are at in the morning, where they're at in the evening, and all that type stuff. So I'm out there, and actually my wife was with me before she had to start work. And we went out, it was clear. Within about 45 minutes, we both look up and we couldn't see the bank in any direction. I'm anchored off a place that looked beautiful on a map, but it didn't really work out in real life. But you had 3 or 4 deep channels that kind of coming together, kind of like coyote trapping. You know, you're looking for all the structure and the features and the travel ways, and my wife's always saying I fish like a coyote trap anyway, but so we're testing some of these things out, but I could not see anything, and it was freaky. And it was because when we were anchored off, the wind's kind of moving us around, and you know, the way you start's not the way you finish, you know, when you're on just a tether like that. So I was sitting there and I was going, wow, this could be dangerous hunting or trapping out here, because for some reason the lake seems to get way more fog than just the pure river did. I don't know if it's the current. I don't know what the difference is. The reason I'm bringing this up, I know a lot of trapping boats won't have any type of technology on there, but there is, you can get some pretty cheap technology. We got a new depth finder on the boat. It was about 480 range, which was expensive, but it's not near as expensive as they were trying to sell me, because apparently you can launch NASA systems now off of boat electronics to fish with. But one little piece of technology that if you're gonna be in the water, when you're gonna be around fog, especially if you're on bigger water, make sure that you get something, and I guess it could be handheld, but like a standard GPS, find technology in a phone. It's something Tim probably can come up with, probably already knows it. So your phone can leave you cookies so you can go back that direction. But on the GPS, on the depth finder that I got, whenever the boat leaves, it leaves a visual trail, which is very handy, because if I go over structure, I can get right back on that line and you know, stop it in time to start fishing it. But this morning, that's when it became really clear. Holy cow, having those cookies, like from day to day trapping, think how this nifty that is, that if you left those on there and you didn't vary very much, you could let, even if you couldn't see very well, you could let those cookies take you to trap line, to trap line, to trap line, to trap line, all the way in. Especially if you had a system in, something like you stay 50, 60 feet off the bank, then when you go in to make a set, you'll see that with the cookies, and you'll know to go in, you come back out, follow on the same path, go in, go out. Because you know, one thing about if you've never trapped big water, when it rains and it floods, or they drop the water real hard, it looks different. It looks very different. And I've never used anything like this trapping, but I can see how it's going to be such a great help. And, you know, if you get like the, I think what I have is a Garmin. I don't know the model. But it also has navigational charts of the lake, like all over the south. And so every time I turn it on, it knows I'm at Watts Bar Lake. And if I've got to go long distances, even in the fog, it leaves me, or it shows me, the actual middle of the navigational way that I can just follow that blindly. It's just something to think about for you guys out there that's going to be tramping out of boats, especially in bigger water. Don't be afraid of technology. Use it. It can make your life a whole lot easier. You can actually, on mine, you could mark every single trap set with a mark, just like a handheld device, you know, right off the front of the boat. So that's pretty handy. But just keep this stuff in mind. Now, I've had a request from Randy Smith. Y'all know that we're pretty good friends. We did some videos and stuff together, school at one time. And he just asked if I would mention this to y'all, because some of y'all may be looking for these out here. Anyway, he's got 100 dozen no BS traps. They're the juniors, and I may be showing my ignorance here because I don't own any no BS just because I got plenty of traps, even though I think they're amazing pieces of equipment. I think that's a number 2 size, but you can look that up online to make sure. So they're no BS juniors. They're outside laminated. They're 2 coils. They're offset. And they're brand new. Absolutely brand new. And I know sometimes getting Kendall's traps can be hard. Somehow Randy got his hands on these, and he's going to be moving those for $225 a dozen. So if you're interested in that, just keep that in mind. That's 100 dozen no BS juniors. And I'm pulling up his phone number because he wanted me to give out his phone number in case anybody wanted to call him about this. But $225 for those type traps seems like a pretty good deal. So just keep that in mind if you're looking at traps, you're looking to get some of those. So Randy's phone number is 724-525-1892. 724-525-1892. And it's a cell phone, so you can text him if you have questions. You know, don't harass him or anything, or go ahead and harass him, and I guess I'll get the blame for that. But anyway, just keep that in mind. It's a really good deal. Now, I just got in. Right before I started this, I had to sign the FedEx box. My Thor 4 thermal scope from ATN just got in. I know there's been a lot of people saying on Facebook that the company's hard to deal with. That is true. The reason I went with these is because of the gentleman that heads up all of the thermal and night vision for the military told me this was the best you're going to get as a civilian. So I took his word over everybody else's, you know, ex-Special Forces dude, now contractor, that's what he does for a living. He said they're great units. And I can't go through all the features yet because I don't have a formatted SD card to put in there, but I'm just playing around with it in the house, and the cats are glowing and my wife's glowing and all that type of stuff. But I noticed something that I found was interesting, that you might find interesting with this. While I was watching my wife glow like a Casper the Ghost, I just kind of panned it out to the window to see what the front yard would look like. Now, here's the freaky thing about the thermal, which I don't quite understand what's going on yet, but it could be very important if you ever use it for self-defense. So my theory, what I plan on doing with it, is getting it zeroed on my Kel-Tec, which I sleep with. You know, it's a 14-shot, 12-gauge shotgun, 7 buckshot, 7 rounds of slugs. I figure that'll stop anything from an elephant to any fool that thinks they want to come into my house. And I've got a light on there now. So I'm gonna keep the light on, but I'm not gonna turn it on with a thermal. comes on very quickly. I just hit the power button, and I've got the first thing I think it comes on is the white hot. So it's where everything goes heat, looks like Casper the Ghost. So I wouldn't have to turn on any lights to be able to clear the house, if you follow what I'm saying. But when I took that thing, and I'm standing about, so I'll be accurate here, 15 feet from a big window. Now, I don't know if it was picking up body heat off of my reflection on the window. I don't know if it sees so differently, because when I took this, what happened is I could see, it looked like a person was outside looking in at me with a scope. I took the scope down, of course no one's out there, I put it back up, there I am again. The reflection is visible in the thermal scope. Maybe not on the different color variations, what I haven't got to try yet with without the SD card. The only reason I'm saying that, first thing that came to my mind, I hear a big bump in the night. Say it's Freddy knocked something over. It startles me. I grab the Kel-Tec, I turn on the thermal, and I'm looking for white signatures. It's not my wife or my cats. And all of a sudden, I pan over a window as I'm going through the house, and there is the bad guy. But the bad guy is not the bad guy. The bad guy is whatever this thing is picking up from the reflection on the window. Could you see the possible problems with this when you're holding a 12 gauge, maybe a little amped up? You may be replacing a bunch of windows. So I was just going to say that, and I'm gonna give many reports on this thing. One of the cool things that Tim talked to me about is try to find ways to defeat it, which I think is a cool project. Does it have to be metallic? Does it, so if someone's looking for you with thermals, how can you do a makeshift way to not be spotted? I'll be curious to see what happens. So just some cool things like that. I'm gonna talk about it as far as deer hunting with the islands. If you can just imagine the advantage when the leaves are off the trees and you're in big hardwoods, and you can actually identify deer apparently with this thing up to 300 meters, or 300 yards. So if you can see it, the deer can't hide from you. And I'm going to be talking about checking traps with it and stuff like that. So that's the reason I wanted to say that. So if we're getting the night show, I want to thank our sponsors. We have the best sponsors, I believe, in the trapping industry. Good guys that take care of their customers. They're honest. They're dependable. Because if they weren't, they wouldn't be on my sponsors list. I don't care what money they wanted to pay. And first this week is F&T. Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. They got everything, like it's just the way their logo says. Everything you can think of for trapping, F&T probably has it. If you're into coon hunting, bear hunting with dogs, cougar hunting with dogs, whatever, they've got a massive selection of all that stuff. And then they're knee-deep into all the predator calls and the videos and the electronics and all that type stuff. Really cool company. Give them a shot. They help sponsor the Trapping Radio Show. Our next one is Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. Jeb is a longtime friend of mine that we've done a lot of business with over the years. He's got a full line of trapping supplies. He's a cool guy to deal with, and he has just a tendency to have some oddities when you're looking for him. So give him a call when you're looking for stuff. You'll be pleasantly surprised. Next one is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They're also the sponsor of the Man Strong podcast. Another good friend of mine, honest. I do my business deals with his business on a personal basis, and I have never once had to worry about a penny. Think about that in today's world. That's the type of people you want to deal with. Full line of trapping supplies. Got fishing supplies. Got deer, bear, hog scents. He's got all kind of predator stuff, makes trap tags, makes Sleepy Creek stretchers, makes the Sleepy Creek conibear setters. Whatever you want, he's got it. Last sponsor, but not least, is Dunlap Lures, which is Jeff Dunlap. And he makes really good lure. He puts a lot of content out on social media, on his Facebook, Trapper Talk. He puts a lot out on YouTube, on Instagram. He's just an all around, I'd say Jeff's a decent guy. I mean, I can tell you one thing as a friend, if he is your friend, you will not have one more loyal. If you are his enemy, God rest your soul. So he sees things pretty black and white, and when he's making his product, he sees black and white, and it's either great or it doesn't go in the bottle. So just keep that in mind when you're looking for lure. He's famous for his Hellfire and his Soul Taker and different things like that. Just give him a shot. He's got really good products. So what I want to talk about, this come from a reader that's liked us talking about all this old school stuff. What the Wolfers did and didn't do and the way they thought and what's different between that and today and what, you know, because we always think we're smarter today than they were back then. And he was asking about long springs. Now, I know probably 95% of you do not use long springs. It's the guys that do use long springs are a little more hardcore about it. It's almost like a club, if you want to say that. There's a lot of respect between guys that use them, and there's a lot of confusion from guys that don't why you would. It is a much older design than what we have today, like the No BS Juniors or the MBs or the Dukes or the Bridgers and, you know, the Coil Springs and all that stuff. Do I think that long springs are better than coil springs? And this may surprise some of you. In some certain situations, I'm going to say yes. And in some certain situations, I'm going to have to say no. They're probably not better as far as holding ability. They're no worse. There's a misconception when it comes to using long springs that always comes up. Like when I give demos, I use a lot of long springs on my Bobcats. I've caught hundreds and hundreds of coyotes in long springs. I got on a kick for, 5 or 6 years, and I probably used almost exclusively long springs for all predators. And part of that reason was I didn't have a lot of what I call small traps, number two size. Most of my coil springs were 6.5 inches, and I was working in states that I couldn't use those. So I didn't really want to go out and buy a bunch of traps that I only use in those states, but I knew in Texas and New Mexico, and when I'm cat trapping here, I like the long springs. So I bought number three Sleepy Creeks, which are now owned by Southern Snares, Brian, and he has some of those in stock, threes and fours, I believe, or he did. And so when I'd go to these different states, and some of these states I stayed in for a long time, pretty much all I was using was number three Sleepy Creeks, which is, you know, about the size of a 175 to a number two coil spring. And the more I used them, the more I enjoyed them, the more I trusted them, and different things like that. But the downside that people see with the long springs, which they didn't see back in the Wolfer days because that was their option, mostly 3Ns or Victors or something like that, Blake and Lambs, is a coil spring is more compact. You don't have to move as much dirt. You don't have to worry about where the springs are going. You don't have to pre-think that as much with a coil spring. And I think that's the reason coil springs actually have become way more popular than the long springs. You can carry more of them because they're physically smaller because you don't have the springs. And the coil springs just became popular because that's what people started using. That's what, companies started marketing. That's what guys were getting, side benefits of different ways to put them in videos and all this type stuff. So it kind of went that way. But the long spring, when you first start playing with it, I promise you, if you go this way, the first 20 times you go to set it, unless you're in sugar sand, you're going to get frustrated. And it's a learning curve. It's a learning curve on how deep you got to bed it. It's a learning curve on what to do with the springs. So I'm going to walk you through how I bed a number two or number three or number, well, I'm not going to use number twos, but a three or four long spring in dirt with the spring, so you can kind of get that it's not that big a deal. So if you do a regular trap pattern to fit the jaws of the trap, just like you would do on a coal spring, it's no different. You dig out your dirt with your hammer most of the time. You dig it out. What I do then, especially if it's like in the first week of getting back hot and heavy with them, I just set them on the ground and push down, and I've got two indentions of the springs. Then I take the hammer and I just rake those back. I dig out where the springs go, and then lo and behold, it only takes a few extra seconds, and you can just plop the whole thing down in there. You don't tear up. This is when I see guys use long springs and they think you got to move so much dirt. You do not have to dig up the whole circle of what the spring and the jaws are going to be. That's a lot of wasted energy. You only, in my opinion, should dig out where the springs go so you have solid dirt for the coyote to stand on. So you set the trap down, you push down on the springs, you see where they're going to be because they'll be in an indention, you scrape those out, you set it in here. Then you cover it back up. Why would you go through the extra effort of using a long spring, even though it takes a few extra seconds? I'll tell you why. They're way more stable in the ground than a coal spring. Yep, I said it. You can pack a coal spring if you get really good at it and get it almost as close as a halfway bedded long spring. And I can tell you from teaching hundreds of trappers and watching videos and being with many trappers, there's only a handful out of all those that could actually bed a coal spring where it was truly solid. Very few guys actually bed. They think they're bedding. But you go up and you put more than, you know, 6-10, you know, a pound of pressure on a jaw and the thing flops up. See, that don't really happen with a long spring because not only do you have the circle, you've got the two springs. And there's a lot of mass making that shape. Because you can put a long spring down in soft dirt on top of the ground and just kind of shove it in. And you'll realize just how quickly you can bed a long spring where it's solid. So the other thing is, if you're having trouble bedding your trap, if you're being honest with yourself, this is the honest zone, this is not the ego zone, but the honest zone. If you're having trouble bedding the trap and you kind of know it, but you know you're supposed to bed the traps good, get you a dozen or so, threes or four long springs that have pan tension with a screw nut and bolt, and this it's one way to teach you what an actually bedded trap is. Because once you bed three, four long springs, 10, 20 at the most, you're going to realize how or what an actual bedded trap feels like when you put pressure on it. I've been around some guys, very few, that can actually bed a coal spring to be half as good as a long spring. It's just the physics of the trap. All the extra mass, the way it lays down. So that's one reason that I like the long spring, is it because I can bed it quicker without messing with it. Because we've all had traps where you push dirt up against the jaws and this, that, and the other. And I mean, you just keep piddling and piddling and piddling and piddling and piddling. And it's about halfway done, but that's best you know you're going to get it because of the soil type. And then you're just like, well, that's bedded. Yeah, you don't have to deal with that with a long spring. So that's one reason. The other reason is the way it handles frozen ground. Long springs, it's harder to freeze in and still catch an animal than it is with a coil spring. And again, this is just basic physics. There's nothing wrong with a coil spring. It's just the way it's designed. With a coil spring, when you bed that in the trap and you've got your ears sitting to the side, if those ears freeze to the bottom of the ground, which happens quite often with a cold snap or something like that, moisture in the ground, the trap physically can't fire until those springs thaw out. So how many times have you been up to a trap when you have freeze and thaw and go on with a coil spring? It's iffy if you really needed to use wax dirt or salt or whatever you're using. And the thing is sitting there in the trap bed, just fired. See, it would drive trappers to the insane asylum if they had night vision on every one of their traps. Because what they're going to see happens a lot with coil springs in that particular type of situation, especially with moisture in the ground. If you're trapping in the east, you probably definitely have moisture in the ground. Animal steps on the pan disconnects from the dog. Regardless of how much tension you got on those coals, till those levers thaw out later, it stays in that position, completely unhooked from the trap pan. And then it just fires when it can. Now see, a long spring reacts very differently. A long spring can be completely frozen to the bottom. You can have the base plate frozen to the ground. You can have the springs frozen to the ground, and it'll still catch an animal. Because all it has to do is be able to move the top part of that spring up maybe 3/4 of an inch, and the jaws close. That's the complete opposite of a coil spring. So that's some of the reasons I like to use the long spring. For me in the freeze thaw up here, you know, where I mostly trap at, that comes in pretty handy. Because if it's maybe I need to winterize or not, most of the time I don't with a long spring and I still do fine. If I make that decision with a coil spring, I'm taking a huge chance on a whole day of just looking at traps that didn't do any good. The other question that comes up with the long springs, and if you look back at the old woofers, there was definitely three different ways that guys set them. They all had their reasons. I'm sure they were all thought out for a particular purpose. A lot of it probably has to do with the way they were showed, or just the way they did it and they got used to doing it. Where do you put the springs? Where do you put the springs? Well, for me personally, this is the kind of the way that I've done it. When I look back at a lot of the old woofers, when they were doing, because they didn't do a lot of dirt hole sets, but when they were doing flat sets, they would actually have the springs closer to the grass clump or the cactus or the bone or whatever it is. So the springs actually faced the flat set. That way there was less dirt that was going to be disturbed when the animal's coming up to it, because of flat sets blended in. You don't want to give any inkling that anything is there. So if he's walking on hard ground, Lawson, he sinks down half an inch, he's gonna realize, because especially if it's before he gets up to the actual kill zone, a lot of coyotes are going to back out on you. So the old woofers, they had their springs facing toward they're flat set, so that's kind of the way that I started doing it, just because it made sense, it worked, I didn't see a reason to change it. Then, but it's more awkward to set a trap that way, for me, long spring. So when I do dirt holes, I will actually put the springs facing towards my legs, because it's easier to rake out those spring trenches, if you want to call them that. So I'll put them towards me. Now see, when you watch my cat set, it's the complete opposite, because the pan edge on the loose jaw is always on the right. So now my springs are going at 9 o'clock. Well, I guess it'd be 7 and 11. But they're going the other way. And I've seen woofers set this way, too. One thing I've noticed woofers did was they would actually, on like dirt hole or badger sets or something, they would put their levers to the side, and then they would bring up the pile of loose dirt over those springs. And it was almost like a walking guide to get him to go where you wanted him to go. But if he stepped there, he would understand why there's loose dirt there, because it's just loose dirt there, if you kind of follow what I'm laying down here. So where you put your springs is really up to you. I think you can put them either way. I don't think it has any variance at all on the catch, because a coyote or a fox or a cat's long animals, they're standing up and they're stepping straight down. So where the dog at is in that, I think, is pretty irrelevant. Same thing with a coil spring. The interesting thing about a long spring is you don't have to have as much power in a trap to hold an animal. It works off mechanical friction. Again, it's just a physics thing. When those springs come up, the way they're designed, it physically locks those in that position. The complete opposite of a coil spring. So let's say that you're in an area that you may have more problem with stray dogs. If you're in the deep south, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I would much rather catch a dog in a long spring than I would in a coil spring, for the simple reason the way you hold the animal. There's not a lot of pressure on those jaws keeping them closed by the coil springs. So the only way a coil spring really works is if the coals can keep enough pressure on the levers to keep them up. So there's a lot of tension going on in between the jaws. It's not that way on a long spring. So you can hold just as big as an animal with a lot less pressure, because one is spring pressure, you know, crushing power, and the other one is mechanical advantage. It's like a leverage that you have on the animal when it gets caught. So that's one of the things about the long spring that I think is pretty cool. And I'm going to say something that's going to go, well, see, you just don't trust long springs. When I do blind sets or mafia sets, unless I don't have any other option, I use coil springs. And the reason for that is pretty simple. I have to move less dirt. In a blind set and a mafia set needs to look like you've never been there. It's harder to do the more dirt you move. So I would rather use a coil spring for those particular sets, unless I'm in an area like New Mexico where it's really soft. Some of the places that I trapped in, it wouldn't really make a difference because it's all soft anyway. But for the most part, you're on a cattle trail, it's red clay. It's just easier to move less of it. You don't have to clean up as much. You don't have as much stuff falling around. It looks more natural when you're over. And I think you have a better way. And the reason I'm saying some of this is if you're used to, like, some of the Kendall's traps, the OBS traps, you grab one of his four coals. By God, you better eat your Wheaties before you go to set that thing. I mean, that thing will hold a fox to a lion to a mountain lion, and I bet probably up to a 200-pound bear, if not more. When you do a long spring, it's easier on your body, but you break it over your knee. And you only have to break them down, and kind of holds them there. So it's easier on you physically, I believe, to set more of them in a day. That's just my thought. But when you do grab them, there's going to be a few notices that a lot of people always have, especially guys that spend a lot of time really, really fretting over small details, is a trap like Kendall's, which will hold mountain lion, is going to be faster coming out of the ground because it's like a souped up drag car. You got all that power, all that tension. It's just sitting there almost. You can almost feel that thing shaking, waiting for the dog to be released, and just woof, all that comes up at one time. Long spring? No. It's kind of like your granddad. Always gets the job done. May not do it just as fast as a new guy, but it always somehow gets done. So the reason I'm saying this, if you've never seen a long spring fire, or you misfire one at a set, and you're used to using a souped up nitrous blown alcohol fuel drag trap, and all of a sudden granddad's in there, it's gonna look to be half the speed of a coil spring. And that just absolutely flips out guys that are worried about the small stuff. Now, logic would tell me the traps that we have now, like the Sleepy Creek or the Bridgers from Tim up in Minnesota, those traps are much faster because of the quality of what they were back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And them boys back then put us to shame in coyote catching. How is that possible? See, because someone that's worried about the small stuff is going to actually think that it's going to be too slow to catch an animal. And I'm here to tell you, that is an incorrect way to think about it. Another thing about long springs that goes along with their slowness is, if you follow the woofers, they did not want the trap to fire until the pan was halfway to base. Now, today we've got super modifiers, super tinkerers, guys that will spend hours and hours on a trap. So if the pan moves 1/32nd, not even right, 1/16th, not probably not even right either, 1/64th of an inch, they've got that thing tuned so tight on a coil spring that the dog is going to release, because they're afraid that the coyote's going to feel the trap going down. Now, you can believe me on this or not. You should do your own experiments. Traps that fire like that have more toe catches because we're going back to physics. You're not letting the animal actually fall into the trap before you set one of these supercharged things off on him. So he's going to be way much higher when the jaws contact him. Now, granddad, long spring, it's slower, where the woofers wanted to go halfway to base plate before it fired, which will drive some of you insane. I understand that. But granddad always got it done. When a coyote steps on a trap, especially the modern traps with a nut and bolt, and you've got an honest 3 to 4 pounds of pressure, when that thing breaks, the foot of the coyote goes to base plate almost every single time with a slower trap. Have you ever seen the Vietnam movies, like from my time, you know, like Rambo, and he came back from Vietnam, and the Green Berets with, you know, which I wish would have been president at one time or another, John Wayne. And they're over in Vietnam, and they're chasing down the Viet Cong, and the Viet Cong set these things up called punji pits. Now, punji pits were nasty little things that they used to dig a pit, could be 2 feet, it could be 6 feet. They were all different size, from one leg to whole bodies. And they would sharpen bamboo, and they would put that in the ground sticking up. So when you fell into that, it would go through your boots, it would go through your legs. If you fell into it, it would just impale you. And you know, one little extra trick the Viet Cong used to do is they used to defecate on those sticks, so you would get a super infection really quick. But how did they get you into the punji pit? One, you didn't know you were stepping into a punji pit, or you wouldn't step in it, same way a cow would be with a trap. So you're walking along, and they've weaved in the jungle bamboo, and they kind of realized that the Americans were bigger than the Viet Cong. So they would play around with this bamboo so it would break at a certain weight, say 100 pounds. So you're walking along, you got all your gear on, you're in the jungle, you're tired, you're sleepy, you're pissed off because you had to pull two shifts of guard duty last night, and you're walking and you're about half zombie. And all of a sudden, you know it, you're falling. There's absolutely nothing you can do about it at that time. All your momentum is going down because the bamboo that they put up top, that they put the vegetation on, it would hold you up to a certain point, and then it would break. And when it broke, you could not physically stop it. And that's what happens with long spring traps if you don't, you know, set them where they fire too quick. So if you let it fall halfway down, the coyote, even if he realizes the pan is moving and he's got at least 4 pounds of weight on there, it is irrelevant to the outcome. It may seem slow to a supercharged trap, but to a coyote that's fallen into it, it's plenty fast enough. It really is. But when people buy long springs, because they've seen them in videos and stuff like that, I always get these emails. I don't see how this is work. The cow will just pull his foot out of there. And my response to them is, well, put 4 pounds of tension on there. You set the pound off, you know, the pan off by putting 4 pounds of tension in. And by the time that happens, you pull your hand out of there and you know it's a trap. You're going to get caught because you're going to have to push hard enough that by the time it breaks, there's this involuntary movement that goes down in the traps on you. Same as a punji stick, same as that. It's actually the same for, I don't like to have coal springs that fire too quickly either, which drives people nuts when they handle my traps. But I think I've done okay. So that's just some different things about the long spring. One advantage over a long spring, me and Scott Adams did a job in the hill country of Texas. And when I say there was no dirt, guys, I mean there was no dirt. So everywhere we wanted to put a trap was this white looking rock that this over time from game trails would get beat down and stuff like that. If there was dirt there, it was like a quarter inch. It was like we were on the moon. The Jeep tires we had to use were solid, and there would be 3 inches chunks of rubber coming out of them on a daily basis. A lot of places, the only thing we could do was pick up dirt when we were in the valleys, set the long spring on top of the ground, put a pan cover over it, pour dirt on top of the trap, you know, 6, 8, 10 inches tall, and try to level out the area. Now the trap was planted, was being a long spring, it was bedded just fine. You cannot do that with a coal spring. My reason for saying this, some of you guys that are doing summer work and you're used to dealing with it in the winter, and all of a sudden now it's August or July and you're at red clay and your auger just sits there and smokes on top of the ground because you're basically dealing with asphalt, and you try to dig your trap beds out And it comes, which you, when you do get it to come out, it's in great big chunks. And it's a mess. Well, that's when you can, you know, look around and just find some little low spots, not in waterways or anything. Set your long spring in there. Pour the dirt on top of it. Spread it out over a big area. Put you in a tractor right there and still catch coyotes. With a coal spring, you're going to fight red clay that's dried out in the summer to no ends. That'll take a very fun thing we do called trapping and make it miserable. That I promise you. So he wanted to know about long springs. I think I've covered about everything I can on long springs. The only thing that comes to mind, if you've got really weak traps, I'm talking about the springs on the long springs. You got two options. One is move the chain to the end of the spring. Coyote has no leverage whatsoever. You don't even have to have a strong trap then to hold a coyote. But what I used to do before I really trusted that was I would call up Winkler at Sterling Furs and I would buy the number one helper springs that people use on muskrat traps that are just completely gone. And I would quickly, I wouldn't really put a lot of heat to them now, but I would quickly spot weld those in to the base where the spring makes the U. And then you're getting pretty close to a supercharged trap then, because if you don't have good hand strength, you're not going to be able to set those. I was amazed at the difference that made. So when I had weak springs, that's what I would do. It's much cheaper than ordering a new spring. And when you put that buffer spring on there, you probably got 30 years for you got to worry about that thing getting soft again. So that's about all I can really think about it. Get them with a nut and bolt. Get a modern one. If you're going to get a Victor or Blake and Lamb, something like that, for goodness sake, do yourself a favor and get a Positrip system put on there. The pinch pans, they're fun to play with sometimes, but they're called pinch pans because they pinch you just as much as they pinch anything else. You can look up, I'm sure online, a Miles, M-I-L-E-S trigger system where you can file it down. You can get about 2 pounds of pressure on a pinch pan if you've got the patience of Job to sit there with a file and do that. But just do yourself a favor, get you something with that you can put pan tension on. Rock and roll. It's a cool thing to play with. Part of the reason I like the long springs because there's a lot of history in those. I've trapped with everything from Blake and Lambs to Victors to the 3Ns, Newhouses, Bridgers, Sleepy Creeks. I'm trying to think if there's any livestock protection. But there's something to me that's just cool about using just an antique design in our modern age that still functions and still kicks butt if you know what you're doing with it. That's the long spring. The Woofers did good with them because it was a good piece of equipment. Now, we've talked a little bit about a book from Wiley Miles. This is back in the, let me check one more time just to make sure I don't get this wrong, 47. He's a pretty well-known trapper, made a lot of lures. I don't know if you can still get them today or not. If so, they're probably more collectible than they are to go use. But in his chapter 14, My Freeze-Proof Set, there's a lot of wisdom in this. You can read about a lot of so-called freeze-proof set. Most of all them are freeze-proof until the mercury goes down. Some say dig a post hole and fill it with manure and set the trap on top of manure heat and keeping it from freezing. I wonder if this trapper ever tried to run from 150 to 200 traps. What he's talking about is kind of like my thing with wax dirt. Love it. But how in the world do you carry enough to run, especially an out-of-state trap line, if you're going to be running a whole bunch of traps? You would need a dump truck. Here is a set that is 100% freeze-proof in any kind of weather, and surely is a boon to the winter trapper in cold climates. When the ground is nice and dry for setting, take a coffee can full of table salt. So complicated. Plain, not the iodine kind. A 12-inch circle of this wax paper, like used in the kitchen, comes 12 inches wide and on a roll. We all know what he's talking about. Dig, trap in the usual manner. Drive stake down through. Now spread wax paper over the hole and set trap in. So the wax paper is actually underneath the trap. Now mix in dry dirt or sand about 1/4, salt mixed thoroughly, and cover trap with the same in a regular manner. So what he's basically saying is you just mix the salt up in the dirt. It's not the way that I normally do it, but this makes a whole lot of sense. And he's in a place that gets a lot colder than I do too. Now coyotes don't smell this, or else they don't care if they do, as they are not at least bit curious about the set, and you will catch just as many with this as without it. It works dry when it rains, when it freezes up solid. Then when the sun dries the surface again, now this spot may look wet as it is slower drying than the surrounding surface, but they step in it, it's just the same, and in a few more days it will be dry looking also. It may look a little alkaline, because if you ever use a lot of salt, sometimes if it freezes and thaws enough, it looks a little white on top, but they'll still step on it. And you can go out on the coldest day and the trap is just like it was when you first set it. Use a well-waxed trap or it will rust badly. That is an understatement. This is the only set I use after the weather commences to get cold, because if you ever had the experience of having about 100 perfect sets out and then getting a day of rain, then mercury goes down to zero and remains that way for a couple of weeks, you know what I mean about using a freeze-proof set after it commences. Now for making these sets when the ground gets wet, I go out while it's still dry in the fall and fill up some clean boxes with some sand and dirt that is dry screen. So he's just getting dry dirt and he's going ahead and pre-sifting it. Make sure there's no rocks or lumps, then use a half bushel to thirds full of 25-cent sack of table salt. See, I don't know what that is. You mix it up thoroughly. Then make the set in wet ground, remove wet earth, and cover the trap with this to make sure it matches the other ground. Or you either carry a sterilized bottle of water and a sprinkler cap and sprinkle set, or shake a little bit of the wet dirt over, carefully brushing out, blending until it looks natural. It's a lot better to make all sets when the weather is dry than ride over wet and then ride over wet spells until it's dry again. But sometimes it stays wet for long spells. Then I report to the above method, which will give satisfaction in results. That is super simple. Now, the reason I'm saying this, I thought that was interesting. The reason it's interesting is he had enough experience that he was actually freeze-proofing his traps before he needed to. This is something that I learned when I was out at Craig's. If it's getting anything towards fall, all of his sets are put in with coal shale from Montana. that'll handle quite a bit of freezing before it actually freezes up. Very different, like I said before, than our eastern cold. So if you're in a place that you know you can drop quick, and I know the Weather Channel, it's they do their best, but when you're in certain areas, especially when you understand the way thermals work and different things, just because it may not be freezing where they're getting the weather doesn't mean it's not going to be freezing where you're trapping. If it's even close, guys, close, and you're running a lot of coyote traps, I want you to think of all the time, energy, expense you took putting in 150 traps, for an example. And then the temperature drops, and now you've got to go rework 150 traps. Isn't it much better, as cheap as salt is? You can go to any co-op in the country, I assume, and they'll have 5 different grades of salt. And you can get this great big old bag that weighs about 50 pounds for just a few dollars. That few dollars, by having a well-waxed trap or full metal jacket trap or some type of coating you're going to put on that thing that the salt's not going to mess with it, how much better are you going to sleep at night if you know your traps are going to work, instead of having to guess, did I make it? Is the temperature going to get me? Am I going to have to go through and, you know, pop all these traps off, then rework them just so they'll work in the cold weather? When it's dry, just like Mr. Miles says, go ahead and do the work now so you don't have to double your work later. You may think it's useless. You may be a gambler and you're thinking that you're going to get away with it. But if you play this game long enough, you're going to realize Mother Nature has a tendency to always find a way to kick in the nuts. Put the work in at the beginning so you don't have to double your work later. It's just a thought. And it's not just my thought. It's not just Craig O'Gorman's thought. I've read this in numerous books from guys that trapped back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. They knew when fall was. They know they could wake up tomorrow and there could be snow, even though it's not supposed to. Or it could drop down to 26 degrees and there's some moisture in the ground and all your traps are screwed up. I've never used the wax under the trap except in Alaska. But if I was somewhere like some of you boys up in Michigan, northern Illinois, northern Ohio, Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, Wyoming, Montana, you know who you are. You know, you guys that it's just normal in the winter to have just solid frozen ground for weeks. Why in the world, when it was easy to do, don't you make sure that your traps are still going to fire so you don't have to remake them? That is a serious lesson from a guy that was doing this in the 30s. Wrote the book in 47. Listen to these guys. They will save you a lot of heartache. If you're doing demos this year, just think how sexy it'll sound if you just say what I just said at a demo. You're going to seem like Nostradamus, where you're helping people not get in trouble. Feel free to. If you're not sure what to say at a demo, just talk about something like this. Guys have been going, that makes a lot of sense. Learn from the wolfers, the old timey ones. we can still use our technology. We can still use our new updated widget sets. But if you keep the basics that they understood and lived by without the technology, now you're doubling up and you're going to be better off. You're going to have a better trap line. You're going to have more fun and you're going to have more fur. And that's the goal. More fun and more fur. Not more work and less fur. Which is what happens when you don't think about what's coming up next week. So guys, think about it. If you've never used long springs, give a few a shot. You might find out that you're meant to be in the long spring club. Be a trendsetter, if you look at it that way. Not a crowd follower where they just use whatever the latest, greatest is and everybody follows whatever everybody else says it is. MO long springs are like your granddad. Keep that in mind. They stay together longer, they work just fine, and they get the job done. Y'all go have a good week. Y'all find some way to get out in nature. Quit watching the news. Enjoy yourself, enjoy your family, and try not to get caught up in all this mess we got going on in the country right now. Hopefully, it'll just go away, even though I'm not sure it will, but hopefully it does. And I will talk to y'all next week.